If you have a badass bank card, do you have a pink one or the black one? I've got to say, both colors look and feel like a badge of honor. It's one of those little things that actually reflects how you've moved through life. Confident, intentional, and not afraid to do things differently. And that's really what Badass Bank is about. It was created to deliver true customer service, and honestly, you feel that. It's not just talk. They show up, they support you, and they make managing money feel a lot more human. What I love most is who they're for. Badass Bank is for the everyday badass, the people pushing through hard things, showing up for their families, rewriting their stories. Built by industry disruptors and backed by decades of banking experience, they're here to challenge the status quo and give you real control over your financial future. Badass Bank is looking for customers who expect more. So the question is, are you badass material? Consider this your invitation. Find your inner badass and visit badass.bank.
Member FDIC.
The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
I want to talk about how amazing C.J. Abrams has been offensively and what a great June he's having. It's been better than his April, believe it or not. And he's playing his way back into all-star contention. But before we do that, I think we've got to acknowledge the two times in one game that he was picked off, which is beyond inexcusable. The first one is just regular bad baseball, what are you doing, pull your hair out stuff. The one after that's, I mean, intolerable. Just unacceptable. And it can't happen again. Like, it's the kind of thing, I don't think I'm hot taking this, to say if that is to happen again at any point, you have to bench him.
100%.
Not permanently, right? But for the rest of the game, you know, maybe the next day, whatever it is. But, like, especially as a leader of the ball club, we can't lollygag to the point that the opposing team has now deciphered that we take so long just doing the very basic thing of getting to the base when the ball is in play live, that they are going to try to backpick us. And for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, in the same game, he was on base five times because he's been unbelievable, and we're going to get to that. But shortly after getting picked off, two innings later, he's back on base with another hit, and he rounds first, and he's, you know, just takes his normal, leisurely kind of stroll past first, and he's kind of getting back to first as if the ball is dead or the pitcher has it, and it's thrown to first base, and he's tagged before he steps on the bag. Bang, bang. I don't know that I've seen that play out that way, like the ball played into the infield, thrown to first. I don't know, Toby, ever, but certainly in a long time. It was a weird series, by the way. We had catcher bumping into umpire twice. I've never, ever in my life seen a stolen base negated by umpire interference. And we had that in game one of the series on a double steal and in game two. So two Abrams swipes and three total steals in the series for the Nats were negated by that, which is crazy. But they also had a bunch of outs on the base paths. First inning of a couple of the games, Lane Thomas got thrown out in the first inning of game three of the series. But Abrams, the twice in one game and the back pick, that was probably the most annoyed I've been with a national at any point this season. And it's funny because it's happening in this stretch where CJ's been unbelievably good.
Yeah, so two things off of that. The first one, when he gets picked off, he's been doing this move where he gets like an extra little jump there where he like slides through it and takes like a slide step and then kind of stops. And I'm not sure that he did that last season, Grant. You can correct me if I'm wrong if you remember, but I don't think that he did that last year. And we've seen him at times like second guess himself. Like, he'll get an incredibly good jump. Like, we saw this at Nats Park a couple of weeks ago where he got that little slide jump and then he didn't fully trust that he was going to be fine. He stopped and then he went again. And so he's starting from a stop position. And even though he's got a huge lead after the little extra slide step, the catcher's able to throw him out. And then you have it in this scenario where a pitch before he took a big slide and then he just ultimately stayed, or maybe the guy fouled a pitch off. I can't remember exactly the situation. And then the next pitch, he does that slide. And then he was correct in guessing the guy was going to throw over. He gets thrown out by a mile because he's way off the bag. It seems like he's second-guessing himself. He's not fully confident in it. And look, as we talked about, like, this is still a learning season. So ultimately you want him to figure these things out, and it's better for him to kind of work through some of these kinks this season versus in the upcoming seasons. But I don't know why it seems like he's second guessing himself. So that's something to keep an eye on. And the other one, like you said, is just unacceptable. It's one of those things where it's just being lackadaisical, a little bit lollygagging. And I think that's kind of the learning experience I'm talking about. When you play in series like this, where it is kind of like a playoff atmosphere of sorts, the little things get you beat. Those sorts of things. Yes, getting picked off is big. Yes, getting thrown out on the base passes trying to steal is big. Yeah, all those things are big. But those are somewhat acceptable because it's baseball plays. This is not a baseball play. This is just you not giving full effort all the time. And those are the sorts of things that are unacceptable. And you got to remember, this is kind of the second time we've seen something like this with CJ this year. Obviously, this one's a bad example with an out. But the other one was, you know how we love to see how he admires his home runs. The issue is, if the ball doesn't go 10, 15 rows over the wall, then it's a little bit risky. And we saw it at Nationals Park, I believe, where he had one that ended up being a double when it should have been a triple. And I think that was leading off an inning. It's things like that that you just can't have. And I think, again, that's the big learning experiences. And credit to Davey Martinez for not benching the young kid and maybe trying to ruin some of his psyche. And I'm sure he pulled him aside and said, hey, we can't be doing this. And hey, this can't be happening. And those are learning experiences. But that is something to keep an eye on, because that's something that you don't want to get in the habit of, where you're going to get that sort of reputation like a guy on the Padres, like a Manny Machado, where you're not going to hustle out every ground ball. You're not going to do this. And in general, that hasn't been the case for any of the Nationals, but you just don't want CJ to get in a bad habit where some of these plays, he just gets a little bit loosey-goosey and lets things slip through the cracks. Because think about, you know, in a year or two or 3 years, when you're in a big playoff game and CJ's excited because he has a single to right field and he's not paying attention, he gets tagged out on a play like this, everyone's going to crucify him. So those sorts of things just have to get ironed out. I think it's again, that's what I'm talking about with that learning experience from this series.
Let's talk good CJ for a second. I'm just reading from the game notes from Nats PR prior to the third game of the series when he took an over. Over his last 16 games, Abrams going in 27 of 66. That's a 410 average over 16 games, people. 9 doubles with 3 homers, 14 RBI in 16 games with 5 stolen bases, a run scored per game. How about this? 5 multi-hit performances in his last 6, including 4 3-hit games in his last 6 prior to the final game. Over his last 11 games, he's hitting .490 with 7 doubles and 2 homers. I mean, just the hottest player in baseball, basically. 7 multi-hit efforts in 11 games on the season going into the finale. Ranks in the National League 2nd in triples, 4th in slug, 6th in extra base hits, 9th in OPS. And in fact, if I can pull up my Twitter here, I've got some other rankings I've got from MLB.com for CJ Abrams, where I thought, all right, let me look and see how he's stacking up. How about 4th in home runs, 2nd in RBI, 3rd in stolen bases, 4th in average, and 2nd in OPS. So he's now back into all-star game consideration in a big, big way here. The other guy that's been rolling in June is Jesse Winker. So CJ in June, .394 average, .1109 OPS. Right behind him, Winker, .343 in June, a .956 ops on the season, a .382 on base, 8th in all the NL, not just in the outfield, 8th in the NL in on-base percentage, 97th percentile in baseball and chase rate, walk rate as well, 97th percentile right now, on pace for right at about 20 home runs and 25 steals this year. I don't know what the Nats are going to do. I think they're going to sell, and certainly I think they're going to sell their expiring contracts like Winker. But if they do choose to do that, I think they're going to get something decent for him. The return could be, you know, maybe not quite Candelario-esque, but something like that. You could get an arm a la Hers, you know, someone who's a tweener starter reliever who you can work with maybe at the double-A level for Jesse Winker. I really believe that.
Yeah, I think they'll get something nice for Winker. Just the way that he's played, and he had a struggling month of May, but he had a good April, and he's had a heck of a June. So I think you see, you know, what you can get, and I wouldn't be surprised if they get a nice return for him. And the thing with CJ, you know, his bat-to-ball skills are really good, and he's someone that he just has to swing at strikes. And when he swings at strikes, and even stuff just a little bit off the plate, and he doesn't try to do too much with it, you see the skill. It's just there. And he's a guy that I think has shown you a lot more slug than people were expecting this year. And, you know, he's been someone that we're seeing national people talking about, not just like nationals people, like national media people talking about CJ, just the emergence that he's had. So I think it's good to see him kind of getting out of that slump. It seemed like in the month of May, maybe he was trying a little bit too hard, or, you know, he got a little bit too into himself with the home runs and stuff that he'd done in the month of April. It seems like he's come back down to earth a little bit and just trying to put the ball in play and, you know, let the ball do, you know, just hit the ball where it's pitched and not try to do a little bit too much at the plate. So it's been good to see him. And, you know, he looks like a superstar when he plays like he does these months. So it's pretty exciting. Now I want to ask you about this though, Grant, while we're kind of deep diving on CJ, something that's interesting, and we've seen it kind of float around Nat's Twitter, is his defensive numbers. And they're not very good from Baseball Savant. Matter of fact, he ranks near the bottom of baseball in some of these numbers, specifically in range. And it's interesting to me. I'm interested if you've talked to people, or if, you know, maybe we need to dive into this a little bit deeper on another pod. But when you look at him and just watch him in terms of the eye test, I've thought he's improved. Now, that's more so the arm than anything, but I thought he's been a solid shortstop. Now, are there guys that are going to make some more plays than him? Absolutely. But I haven't thought that he's been a below average, like league worst shortstop, like some of the numbers are saying. But the numbers are saying that he's been awful. So I just don't quite understand that.
So I don't buy defensive metrics completely anyway. I cite them, and I try not to only cite them when they benefit the guys I like or whatever. But it is fair to say that they are not on the level, I don't think, to this point, as offensive metrics. Now, some of the things are you know, getting more quantifiable. Like, it's better than where it was. I remember early on when I started to dive into baseball numbers with, like, UZR and different ways of looking at it. It was really bad. And now with outs above average or some things that are calculatable, you know, I guess it's better, but I disagree with the metrics. My eyes tell me he's been better than terrible defensively. I would even say better than bad. Is it fair that he is inconsistent at shortstop? Yes. Is it fair that I think, frankly, his problems are the routine plays more than the range plays? I think he gets to plenty of balls. Does he make like the incredible jump throw from deep in the hole that Trey Turner used to? No, not really. He has not become common place. A guy I expect going to the five high fold to, you know, make a strong throw or whatever. And maybe that's where the range thing is hurt. But I think more often than not, like we saw one in the final game of the series where he could have turned two, balls hit right at him. He goes to plant and kind of throw before he has the ball, and it's in and out of his glove. And that just costs you probably two outs. You can't assume the second one, but I think it would have been a double play. It was hit pretty hard. And you get one of those a week or so, which is too often. But I think he is a good defensive player. I think he's uber athletic, toolsy, you know, can move well, fluid. He gets to a lot of balls. I think if you paint the area he can cover, you know, range, so to speak, I think that it is actually a decent area at shortstop. And there are people that will tell you, oh, well, he's not going to stay at short. I think that's ludicrous. That to me is silly. Like, this is what a shortstop looks like. He's 23. I mean, he's very, very young. A lot of guys his age are still in the minors normally, or he's in his first year. It just so happens he's been there for a few years, but think about the strides he made from last year to this year defensively. In April, every ball hit to him was a like an adventure. I mean, You were just praying he made the play. We are so light years past that now that if he's able to do that again, like another leap, then you go from what I believe right now to be like maybe a hair below average shortstop in terms of overall with the ability to be better than that with his athleticism to actually being a really good one. So a long-winded answer, Toby. I don't know if it answers your question, but I don't buy this idea that he is a really bad defensive shortstop at all.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think of him as like, you know, a five-star shortstop by any means, but I think he's average to maybe just slightly above average in terms, like you said, some of the range. He doesn't make tons of spectacular plays, but he has made a couple this year that were, you know, five-star type plays. So I don't quite understand where some of those things are. It is kind of the routine things, but even Mike Rizzo was talking with the Sports Junkies, and he was saying that CJ started to make some of those routine plays routinely, which is nice to see, and you've seen a huge improvement from last season. It is just odd, though, when you look at those metrics, and, you know, sometimes people just blindly look at the metrics and maybe don't match that up with their eye test or vice versa. Like, I think when it comes to defensive numbers, I think this is more so the lesson on this, Grant, is when it comes to these defensive numbers, you can look at them and sometimes it can give you a little bit of a story, but they're not nearly as good as the offensive metrics. And so if your eye test tells you the guy's a solid defender, you trust your eye test.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
Yeah, well said. Because they got swept, it feels like the season's kind of coming apart at the seams. A little bit bigger picture view. They are still 11-7 in their last 18 since June 7th, tied for the third best record, maybe now fourth after that loss in the league. And then if you look at, you know, even wider out since May 24th, 17-15, which I think is the sixth best record in the NL. So playing certainly above expectation. I do think this series coming up with the Rays, though, if we could pivot to that, is going to be a real pendulum swinger. I don't think if you're Mike Rizzo, you should make the decision on buying or selling based on this series. You know, go back a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, when they went to Baltimore and got swept by the Orioles. Brad Hand, I think it was, like, blew a couple games. And it was like on the drive home, supposedly, that Rizzo started calling everyone and saying, all right, we're selling. And next thing you know, Max and Trey were gone and they blew up the roster. I don't think it's that kind of series, but I think this series will tell us whether or not this team is going to be able to hover around 500 and kind of stay in the conversation, or if this is the beginning of the tailspin where you lose two out of three, you don't play clean baseball, maybe you salvage one or you get swept, and you leave town and you're 6 or 7 under within the next handful of days playing a hot Mets team. You're not hitting. Pitching comes back to earth a little bit going into the break. Like, I think this is going to go one way or the other. Ildemar Vargas took to social media and was like, hey, we're going to be fine. Guys are doing that for a reason. As a veteran in the clubhouse, he kind of sees that the doubt is seeping in, right? He sees, whether it's just from the outside or even internally, there is this now feeling like, here we go. Like, we've been waiting for the other shoe to fall the whole time, and now you've lost three in a row, and it's happening, and the bullpen's faltering, and the really strong starting rotation this trip through has not been nearly as good, right? So you're seeing that, and he's basically going, you know, trying to hold the fort down. He's trying to duct tape everything together as a veteran, you know, with his tweet, essentially. My point is, this series is going to tell you a whole lot about what this group's going to be, I think, like a month from now.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think it really is going to change a whole lot in terms of what their, you know, plans are going to be. I think Jesse Winker, guys on those expiring contracts, like we've laid out before, I think Mike Rizzo understands where they're at. So they're probably going to get moved regardless. I do think, though, maybe if you end up losing two or three in this series or even getting swept in Tampa, I think maybe that opens the door a little bit more for, you know, Rizzo to consider moving one of the top two relievers in Hunter Harvey or Kyle Finnegan. Not to say that he's actively shopping them, but maybe he's a little more keen to listen to those phone calls. Because if you're, you know, if you lose two or three, or you lose, you know, all three in this series, you're coming back home, you know, 6, maybe 7 games under 500 going into July. You know, that's something where, okay, you're starting to be a little more realistic and see where you're at. And, you know, maybe you want to start looking more towards the future and next season. Not to say that they're just going to ultimately move those guys, but I think it could help in some of those decisions. But, you know, that's also on the flip side, Grant, where if they go into Tampa and they can, you know, wipe away the series sweep in San Diego and take two or three, and you feel pretty good after you took two or three in Colorado. Yes, you got swept in San Diego, but you took two or three in Tampa against a solid Rays team. You know, you come home and you've got a long homestand around the 4th of July, and maybe you get a couple wins there. You know, maybe this ball club can just hover around 500, and that makes, you know, the decision pretty easy, where you just move on from the guys on expiring contracts and keep Harvey and Finnegan unless you get something crazy. And I know people are going to throw around the name Lane Thomas. I just don't feel like he's even someone, unless they said some team wanted him crazy bad and sent some stupid offer that, you know, Rizzo just would be foolish to not take. I don't even think he's available, honestly. But, you know, if they come back and they're playing well, maybe they hold on to a Harvey and a Finnegan unless they get a crazy offer like that. So I think that, you know, this is a big stretch for the team. And yes, coming off San Diego, it does feel like the sky's falling out a little bit. But at the same point, if they go into Tampa and take two or three, coming home right around 500, beginning of July, I think you feel good about that. Like, I think if you told any Nationals fan that they'd be at the spot where they're at going into this Tampa series, I think anybody be happy with that. So, yes, some of the context and the roller coaster through the year has been a little bit crazy at times. But also, like you said, just because you get swept in San Diego doesn't mean that this team hasn't been playing really good baseball basically over the last month.
I want to go back to something you said earlier in that answer when you referenced that this probably does not determine anything as far as how they feel about the deadline. I agree with you, and I certainly hope that's the case. I think they should sell. Maybe not a wholesale or anything crazy, but they should move a couple pieces and continue to add for the future. Do you think there's any chance? This is a Danny Ruye theory from my normal show on 106.7 The Fan. He seems to think that ownership is going to possibly see the possibility of, if they're in the race, more people coming to games and like more people being invested and interesting. And maybe they just prioritize a couple more butts in seats. You call up James Wood, you get some butts. You call up Dylan Cruz, you get some butts. But also, you know, you're in the race a little longer, you get more people to come out. Do you think there's any chance ownership would tell Rizzo, we don't want you to sell? Like, let's batten down the hatches and just see what's what. I don't buy that. I think they will be, they're sitting back and going, please do whatever you got to do to, you know, as long as you're not spending money, as long as you don't want a penny, do what you got to do to build for the future. But Danny really thinks there's a chance ownership is going to just say, we need to sell tickets over all other considerations.
Now, I don't necessarily agree with that theory that Danny has, but I think it's interesting because what do you think the likelihood is? And like we laid out, like I don't think Lane's available. So I think we're both pretty low on, you know, what are the chances Lane Thomas gets moved. But looking at Kyle Finnegan and Hunter Harvey, let's just assume they're playing decent baseball. They're right around where they're at now, you know, play 500 ball right now until they get to about the deadline. So they're about, you know, 4 or 5 games under 500. I still don't feel like the likelihood that those guys get moved, Grant, is very high. So if we're talking about selling at that point, then you're looking at one guy. You're looking at Jesse Winker. And yeah, I don't think it's that crazy to think that ownership would say, hey, keep Jesse Winker around. And I don't even know if that would be an ownership call at that point, because it's not like Jesse Winker is the one that's putting the butts in the seats. But it wouldn't surprise me at least a little bit if they just said, you know, let's just keep Jesse Winker around. Let's keep this thing rolling. I think it's important for the guys to play meaningful baseball into August, maybe even into September. You know, if you want to bring up James Wood, which we think is going to happen hopefully pretty soon, then Eddie Rosario can make way for that. And, you know, down the line, you can figure out if you're going to try to bring up Cruz or if you maybe just wait till September or whatever the case may be there. Like, I think there are ways to do it, but Rosario's not really a trade ship, so I don't think they're going to be able to move him. Senzel's not really a trade ship. Gallo's not really a trade ship. I guess Trevor Williams, depending upon when he's able to come off the injured list, could be a trade ship. But otherwise, we're talking about Harvey and Finnegan and Thomas, and I just don't see any of those guys getting moved. So even if ownership stepped in and said, hey, you know, don't sell, like, I think Rizzo's going to be like, wasn't really going to anyways, aside from Jesse Winker.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Also, the reason I don't believe that theory about like ownership cares about tickets, then why wouldn't you have called up James Wood before his hamstring injury, right? That helps sell tickets. Why wouldn't you have spent any money this offseason, like at all? They had so many different ways, if really they cared about tickets, that they could have sold a few of them. So I'm not quite buying that at this point.